Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and today I'm joined by Karupa Chinatambi of the Blend team. Karupa, thanks for coming on. And Karupa is here today to show us how to design Metro-style apps that we build using HTML and JavaScript. Last week, in the previous episode, I showed you how to use Visual Studio to get started building Metro-style apps in JavaScript, which means the apps built with HTML. I spent no time designing the apps because I knew that in this episode we'd have Karupa on, plus my Blend skills are pretty rudimentary at this point, although I am getting better at it. So Karupa's going to show us Blend for Visual Studio, and if you download any of the Visual Studio beta SKUs, whether it's Visual Studio 11 Express or all the way up to Ultimate, and you're building a Metro-style app, you can design that app with Blend. Blend for Visual Studio, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so introduce yourselves, tell us a little bit about who you are, and then you're going to show us how to use Blend for Visual Studio.
Absolutely. So I'm a PM on the Blend team, and I've been there for about 4.5 years. Mm-hmm. And I worked on everything from Silverlight to WPF to the Windows Phone support, and recently I've been working on our ability to build Metro-style apps in HTML primarily.
Right.
So in this session, I'm going to dive right in and get started.
Okay.
So it's a quick agenda. Give a quick intro. Most of my time will be spent in Blend itself. So
excellent.
I'm going to start off by showing you Hello World, just showing you how to visually build.
Not that we don't like slides, but
I only have two more slides. Yeah, very quickly. Quick agenda. And essentially, if you had asked me what is Blend, at a very high level, I'd say that it's a professional design tool for building applications. And for the purposes of this talk, I'm going to say that Blend supports building apps in Silverlight, WPF, and Phone, and more mm-hmm. recently, Metro-style apps in XAML and HTML.
Right.
But I'm going to be focusing primarily on the HTML side of things. So let's get started.
Yeah, we're going to do the episode after this. We'll have somebody show us Blend for
exactly.
XAML apps.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So that should be pretty fun as well. So the last slide I'm going to show before I get into the demo is really, Blend is, I emphasize professional design tool in all my slides. And what I mean by that is, it's important to know is that you're expected to know HTML and CSS. If you don't know HTML, don't know CSS, and details of the framework, Blend will help you out, but you'll be most productive if you actually know how to actually use get all the various language constructs. And as such, Blend gives you, doesn't abstract away any details for you. So you get as much detail or as little detail as you want. And essentially, what really Blend provides is the ability for you to focus on the concepts of building your app, designing your app visually, and not really worry about the syntax. You don't have to worry about where the comma goes, where the colon goes, what order the arguments need to be in. None of that you need to worry about. Just focus on the concepts. We'll take care of the rest.
Right. So we have this world, and we've talked about this for a while, but it's really true that you can have this separation where the developer builds the app, lays out the basics of what the HTML is, maybe does a little bit of styling, certainly writes all the code, and then can hand that over to the designer who can then style it and design it without mucking up the code. The developer then opens it, continues going, and you really can have this kind of collaborative process.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm going to show it in my demo, the great workflow we have between Visual Studio and Blend is how you can really do the whole development and design side of things really well.
Right, and you as the developer can get as good at Blend and designing as you can.
Absolutely.
Right, that's great, but you don't have to worry about the actual design and the actual look.
Absolutely.
Which is great because it's just a total time sink for us developers.
Yeah, do what you're good at, essentially. So perfect. Okay. All right, let's get started with the demo. So my first demo is going to be a Hello World app, just to give people an idea of what Blend does, what it looks like, and what all the main features are. And gradually I'll get into more detail and show you a more involved app shortly afterwards. So I'm just going to go into Blend. So this is the Blend design surface. I create a blank application, nothing going on here. Mm-hmm. And if you've seen Blend before, it should look very familiar to you. You have your design surface, you have your code editors, and you have all the various panels that you have. So what I'm going to do first is when I say Hello World, and in HTML, you need something that displays text, and I'm going to use my heading 1 tag. First, I'm going to delete the content is here example. I'm going to type in H1, and I'm just going to go ahead and insert it into my document.
Mm-hmm.
And once I've done that, notice that H1 is displayed. In your HTML, H1 the tag has been added with some default values.
Right.
I'm going to go and say Hello World. And now you'll see that Hello World has been modified, and now it shows up in my design surface. And really, that is essentially Hello World. But right now, if you look at your application, though, it looks very plain, right? I mean, it's Hello World's really small. It takes up there's a lot of space here. It looks really lonely. So we need to make it larger. We need to change the color while we're at it as well. And so once you start talking about making visual changes, like, you know, I want to, you know, I added my text, which is great, but now I want to make it look a little nicer, you know, you really start talking about CSS. And one of the things Blend really provides is, you know, really, really great support for working with CSS, creating styles, creating, you know, modifying them, and really, you know, designing your application the way you want to. So what I want to do first is, let's say, you know, I want to make the size of my, of this text larger. And, you know, there are various ways you can do it. One way is by, you know, making the styles inline, mm-hmm. which, you know, I don't prefer it. Some people might, and they can do it that way. But the way I'm going to do it is actually by creating a selector that targets, you know, this particular Hello World element directly. So I'm going to call this one Hello World. I'm going to give it an ID. Let's call it Hello Text. Once I've done that, the ID attributes have been added, and Hello Text has been created for you. So what I want to do is now create a style rule that targets it. So I'm going to go ahead and say, right-click on the element, say, create style rule from element ID. Once I've done that, you know, default.css, we created an empty, empty style rule for you with the selector that targets that particular element. And so all we need to do now is make
it just has to have the same name.
Correct. For an ID-based selector,
right.
Yes. And we support.
And if you rename it there, it would be updated everywhere?
One way to find out. Hello. No, but that's a work in progress, and, you know, we will get that shortly.
That's
fine. So it's called Hello.
Okay.
And
but
so
that, it should do that. It probably will eventually.
It will eventually do that, yes. Absolutely. So we're going to have Hello selected. And, you know, here we have our applied rules panel, which is basically a way for you to specify where exactly you want modifications to go through. You can have it be inline. You can have it, you know, this is a more simple example, but some of your content will have multiple styles from multiple style rules and different style sheets actually affecting the final look of it. And you can specify exactly where you want to go. I'll show this part of the UI in more detail, but I just want to show you that I'm specifying that any changes I make here will go specifically into the Hello style rule, which lives inside default.css. So we said we want to make the font size larger. So what we have in the CSS properties panel is essentially a collection of every single CSS property that is supported by CSS 3 that you can possibly use.
Mm-hmm.
And we have it categorized for you to make it a little easier to find stuff, but you can just search for it if you really want to as well. So I'm going to go and find the text category, and here's the font size element where I can put the size I want. So what size do you want me to put there, Robert?
So I guess my first question is, how do I know what size it is now? That doesn't show up?
So right now the size, but if I go to computed values, you'll be able to see the current size of the element, which is 56 pixels.
Okay,
so this gives you, you know,
make it 78 then.
Make it 78. So let's make it 78.
Because I was going to say 24, which would have made it smaller.
No. We're currently zoomed out a fair amount.
Okay.
Yes. 76. No, you got to do better than that. 78 is too small.
Yeah.
Let's try something else. 300. All right, 300 is a little better. Makes it much larger. And, you know, next, let's go ahead and look at what was added for you. You know, you added it visually, like 300 pixels, and we automatically added the appropriate property for you and all of that. Let's do the color while we're at it as well. Let's just make it, you know, it looks sort of dark and bleak right now. Let's just make it all yellow.
Perfect.
And so, yeah, so now you have, you know, the colors, and you can see that the color changed right below
it. And you get that eyedropper that you can use to select one of the colors, like if you wanted it to be the color of the P in that PowerPoint, right, you can...
Absolutely. Like, you know, you can just go and click, go right here and make it the color of the P.
Yeah, that is not a new feature in Visual Studio 11, but it's certainly something that everybody should know is there.
Absolutely. And Blend has had it, you know, since the very beginning.
Right. So Blend had it first.
Indeed. So, yeah, that's Hello World, you know, very basic, you know, overview of, like, building a very simple application, making some modifications to HTML, styling it, and just getting it up and running. If we were to hit F5, we'll see that, you know, it runs. And I hit F5.
So this is a Metro-style app
that
you created in Visual Studio, or did you create it in Blend?
I created it in Blend.
Created in Blend, okay.
I just created a blank project, and, you know,
you
just did what it did. So, but, you know, this app is, you know, it's an introduction, but really... nothing spectacular about this application. I mean, you could have created this app, like, you know, using tools you had, like, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So really what we're going to show next is how to take Blend and create a really cool app that, you know, uses controls, uses a lot of the Metro-style principles.
Just one more thing before you go. Fire up Visual Studio.
All right. So I'm opening the exact same solution in Visual Studio.
Okay. So, all right. So you... So close Blend for a second. I just want to make sure that everybody understands this. So this is now opening that same solution. Then right-click on Default, and you can open in Blend.
Correct.
Okay.
You can work vice versa and all of that. And right. It's the exact same markup you right. saw in Blend, yep. except you know, you don't have a design surface.
So you as the developer can start the app in Visual Studio, but the designer could start the app in Blend.
Absolutely.
And then you open up in Visual Studio and add your stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't matter which cool. tool you start right. creating your application cool. in. Will this work, you know? Mm-hmm. As long as you have the files on disk, we'll work with
right.
it.
Right.
Great. So next up, you know, I'm
okay, one last question.
Yes. Okay.
You told me I can ask questions.
Absolutely.
Source code control from inside Blend?
We have support for it, but I don't believe we have it turned on for HTML applications.
Okay. All right.
All right. So before I talk about our next application, let me show you what it looks like first. So here we have a very simple application. It's called SwagWatch, and I'm just going to run it to show you what exactly it does. So the first thing that strikes you about the app is that, you know, it's colorful. It has some, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of images and a lot of data. And the data is, you know, your standard list view with some data source defined around it. And I can just, you know, scroll around and see different things. And there's an animation. If I hover over the logo, decided, you know, why not? Let's add a little animation
sure.
there. And also you can see that when I right-click on it, there's a little different style to, you know, what happens when you check on the element and all of that. And the last thing is also, we also made this app, like, you know, device-friendly. So, for example, you know, here's what it looks like in full screen and all that. But mm-hmm. if you were to snap it, for example, notice that the logo goes away and you see this much smaller version of the app. And you see, like, little subtle variations that show, like, you know, other orientations.
It's interesting that you didn't change the tile, I know it's not really a tile, but the items inside the list view, you didn't make those smaller ones.
No, I did not.
In general, recommend that?
I mean, you can definitely do that. For example, you know, there are two different layouts you can use for items in a list view, like, you know, think of grid in the list.
And you can also definitely change stayed it. With the horizontal scrolling instead of vertical up and down. Is that, what's your recommendation as a UX type person?
I think my recommendation would be like what you mentioned, to actually have it be scrolling vertical. You don't want to see, like, you know, another app right there, like a part of it. But you know, it's entirely up to you on, like, you know, how you prefer it.
You just do it in your media query, so you can do whatever you want.
You can do it. You can do exactly
it. Just interesting to see what people do.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, mainly because I'm going to show every bit of it from scratch. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to, you know, complicate it too much.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can
do
all kinds of things. And, you know, what I'm going to show you, well, you know, you can expand it to whatever you want to. So let's get started. It's created from scratch, actually. So I'm going to go ahead and create a new project, create a blank application. And, you know, it takes a second to load. And, yeah, so now we have a blank application. Nothing there, you know, very basic. So what I'm first going to do is, like, you know, my designer created some images for me. So I'm going to go ahead and add it to my project. Let me go ahead and drag it in there. Overwrite the logo image. All right, so I just added some assets to my project. And so for this application, you know, in general what I like to do is, like, I like to add some of the logos, some of the backgrounds, just to orient the app visually so I can, you know, start designing it.
Okay.
So what I want to do is, like, you have a question?
Always. So you started with a blank application.
Yes.
Which is obviously blank. If you had chosen the split view or grid application, then you get sort of the grid already with, you know, the row in the top and the gutter, if you will, on the left. Is there an easy way to add that here if you decide you want that, but you want to start with a blank application?
You mean, if I start a blank application, can I add that grid with all the functionality, you know, separately?
Yeah, what's the easiest way right now if you wanted to add that to this application?
I mean, short of, you know, copying and pasting markup, you know, it's not very easy for you to take a blank application and add those functionality.
Okay.
But as you'll see shortly, it's not very difficult once you know what you're doing to actually get up and running with having that same grid with, like, you know, items you can select and click and all that.
Cool.
Because a lot of the functionality is built into the controls. So once you just hook them up and get them working, it's actually quite easy
to
get it up and running. So first of all, I'm going to do is, like, just add my logo. So, you know, here's the projects panel. You know, it's very familiar. Just basically a Windows Explorer-like view of all the files and projects in your, you know, in your application. You also have, like, references to see, like, anything you might have added that might be from some other library.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to first add my logo. I'm just going to go ahead and drag and drop it into my design surface. And once I've done that, you know, we have the image tag. It's under body. And, you know, logo's there. Very simple. And in the apps, you know, starting to look nice already. So what I'm going to do next is I want to add a background image. You know, currently it's pretty gray, pretty plain.
Yep.
And so I'm going to give my body an ID value. I'll just call this main. And I'm going to go ahead and create style rule from element ID, just like I did before, so you can see that we create a style rule for you. And before I go there, you know, we have a styles panel, which gives you an overview of all the styles you have. So maybe wondering, you know, why is it in default at CSS? Well, that's the only, you know, it's only writable CSS file you currently have, and main is what I've added. So I've added, you know, I have main. I'm going to go and set a background for it. I'm in my background category. I'm going to go and type in the path to my image. We made some improvements in this area in how you add images to your project. So next time you guys see another version of Blend, you'll see a visual way of being able to specify images. So /images.bg.png.
And those are aster...
Yeah, it's quotation marks.
Quotation marks.
Exactly. Okay. And if you look at the HTML, you'll see that URL images slash bg.png. So yeah, so I have a background image, it doesn't look particularly great because it starts at the top left corner and it ends abruptly at the end.
Yeah.
And with CSS3 and even CSS2 actually, you had some ability to actually specify various properties on your background image, like how do you want it to look, where do you want to start from. So I'm going to go and say position Y. I'm going to say bottom. Now it starts off at the bottom.
Nice.
And now we can see that it's actually, another problem. It's actually it's repeating. And we don't want that to happen either. So I'm going to change the repeat property and say no repeat. And notice as I'm making edits in my property inspector, our design surface updates immediately.
Right.
And what you're seeing is not a static version of your application, not a static version of an app that you built earlier. It's a live version. We're running live JavaScript, live HTML, live CSS. And you'll see more of that as I go through more advanced portions of my demo. And so the last thing I'm going to do to the background is, you have the background gradient has a light gray color. But it doesn't quite match the background you have there. So I'm going to go back and bring up the color picker and just say, I want the color to match the exact edge of the gradient. And so now you have my background that looks kind of nice. And now all we really have to do is add some data, add some, add list view control and do some things there.
I love the way that it's showing you the CSS because
this
way you learn what the CSS tags are.
Absolutely. We really want, people to trust the markup that we generate for them, and this is one great way of seeing what's happening, here's exactly what's going on, and if you want to make quick changes to it, you can, and we'll just work both ways. You can make modifications to the property visually and have CSS update, or you can do it vice versa and have the visuals update for you as you want. Right. So next, let's go ahead and add some data. So I already created some data already. So I'm going to show you Visual Studio shortly to how you can actually do some more JavaScript debugging and all of that. But for now, I'm just going to use the very simple, very basic JavaScript functionality, editing functionality in Blend. I'm going to go and copy and paste our data source. And I'll just talk very quickly what exactly this is doing. So, what I'm doing right now is declaring, a JSON object, which is a list of, properties called color, color text, and shirt. Mm-hmm. And they're basically hex values. And they're hex values of all the various colors you can use, just for this example, and I'm basically wrapping that all into a binding.list object and just calling it listViewData. And you'll see shortly that all this data will be visualized using a listView control, which is probably the most popular control that many people have seen on how to do these things. So I'm going to go to listView, go and add it to my project. And once I've added it, listView has been added, but really you don't see anything because the listView is only really useful when it has some data actually pointing at it. So I'm going to go ahead and say, let's add some data. So I'm going to go ahead and go to the control category of my HTML attributes for the list view. And here you can see a list of all the property, all the attributes that this particular control exposes. And the one that is particular to data is the item data source one. So I'm going to go and type in what I had here, my list view data. I'm just going to point it right here, list view data. And then that data source property is the exact item that you need. And once I've done that, let me refresh. You'll see a lot of data. I mean, it doesn't look very pretty. If I zoom in, you'll see that, it's basically a literal representation of all the data that I have.
Right.
But at least it's a step in the right direction. At least now I know that at least my data is actually being shown here. And next we'll start working on, visualizing it. But first, I just want to make a minor change where my list view is taking up, only a small amount of the space. I want to take it up, have it take up more of the space. So what I'm going to do now is actually modify the size of this element. And I'm going to create a list view. I'm going to create a style rule that particularly targets the list view. So list view has a few classes defined already, when list view, when swipeable, and all of that. And I'm just going to go ahead and use that. I'm just going to copy one of those and just modify it for this particular task I'm doing. So I'm going to right click on it and say, create style rule from element class. And once you've done that, you'll see that you have list view and the two classes that were already defined on it declared. So I'm going to say, create element from class. Once I do that, in my default.css, we create a small copy of this for you. So while I'm here, I'll just change the height to what I want it to be. So going with the sizing, set the height to, let's say, 75%. All right, so now it's a little larger. You can see more of the items. So now, though, comes the really fun part, really where Blend really helps you out, is you have data. You can select it. You can modify it. But really, it needs to be visualized somehow. You need some HTML backing it. And the way you visualize data you know, if you've done data binding in Silverlight, WPF, or even other languages before, you need what's known as an item template, some kind of an HTML that wraps all your data around and can be duplicated and actually help you visualize it. And the way you create an item template is, sure, you can create it manually by just, you know, adding your template in markup, or you can just create it visually by just saying, here's my item template category. I'm going to say create new template. I'm going to say identify this template by, let me call this my color container. Once I've done that, we automatically add the control item template for you right here, where it's a div class color container, the data win control win.js binding template. Yeah. And from here on out, I can go ahead and start really modifying what my application
does.
And
then that HTML also added to the list view the pointer to the template, right?
Exactly, exactly. If I were to look at my HTML, you can see that data win options has item data source list view,
yep,
and then item
and
then template.
The item template.
Select
right.
color container. Okay. And you can see it visually as well if I were to go back to my, if I were to select my list view and to see that, you know, it's been added right here,
yep.
color container.
Cool.
So what I want to do now is just first go ahead and make the size a little bit better, because currently there's no size specified on my template, so everything's taken at the bare minimum size needed to get things done. So I'm going to go ahead and select the outer container. I'm going to give it an ID value. I'm going to give it a class value, actually. Okay, I'm going to ask you a question, Robert. Do you know why I'm specifying class instead of ID for this one?
No.
Well, so a template gets duplicated multiple times in your DOM, and an ID can only be used once.
Okay.
So if you use a class, you can apply it multiple times. So you're going to get back at me for that question, aren't you?
Nope.
So I'm going to call it, you know, color.
I'm just going to plead relative ignorance because I'm more of a XAML guy than an HTML guy.
So. Okay, that's a very fair point.
Well, you know, if I was an HTML expert, I would have known. But.
Okay, that's a fair point. So I just gave my, you know, the outer div a class value called color outside. I'm just going to give it, you know, do the same thing I did before.
For an expert in one thing, you can hide, you can, you know, punt in your ignorance of everything else, right?
All right. You know, absolutely. You know, I will definitely take that advice. So I'm going to specify the height and width on this element explicitly. So instead of, you know, I'm just going to use a search feature and just search for it directly. Give it a height of 266 pixels. I'm going to give it a width of 260 pixels. I'm just going to go refresh my document quickly just to make sure that all the size gets updated. And now you can see that, you know, all my elements have a size to them. And, you know, here's what something really cool. It's like, you know, still nothing particularly spectacular. I mean, I have my element size, I see object, nothing really interesting going on here. But what I'm going to do now is I'm going to give my color, each container here, I'm going to give it a background color. And what I'm going to do first is show you what happens is that, let me clear this. And, you know, I can just set it any color I want. And notice that, you know, setting a color on one applies them to
so
all of
them.
So
you may cover this, but the question is going to be, can that background be bound to the data?
Exactly. And that's exactly what I'm going to next.
Awesome.
You know. It's almost as if it was scripted. It's amazing. So the background color is set to blue. And what I want to do, actually, is bind it to the color for my data source.
Because that way, if you were, you know, displaying expense reports, or you know, in a any type of, well, you can even do it in a consumer app. But you could, the background could be red if the item's out of stock,
exactly,
or yellow if it's due in the next week,
correct,
or you know, red if it's an expense report that's been outstanding for more than 2 weeks. You could define the rules and then have that visual appeal.
Absolutely, because you know, every single, you know, square you see here is actually a mapping to, you know, one chunk of data right here.
Yep.
And so what I want to do is actually have the background be, you know, the hex value specified under the color property.
Yep.
So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go to HTML attributes panel. You know, we have a data win bind attribute that I'm going to be binding it to. So style.background color colon color. It's the value from that. And when I hit refresh, notice what happens.
Excellent.
Every single element has this new look and feel. And notice that, you know, we're still working on improvements to how you specify the binding. So the next time you'll see it, you'll see something hopefully better than being able to type it in manually like that. But right now you can see that, you know, we went from having just like a blank, boring square to actually having each one correspond to the actual content that you have here. So, you know, we're getting very close to what our application needs to do. All we need now is to put our shirts in and add some, you know, text that gives you an idea of what color each shirt actually is. So I'm going to go back, you know, I'm going to go ahead and select my text here. And I'm going to go ahead and add some image, add my image here. So it'll be shirt. I'm going to double click that. Notice immediately when I've done that, all the shirts have appeared.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the shirt works, by the way, is that it's kind of a stencil, essentially, where the body of the shirt is transparent, but the outside is opaque, which is why the background of the shirt actually just seeps right
on.
But
I noticed when you added them that they were all kind of opaque, grayish.
Exactly.
So that's how the PNG was designed.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Exactly.
Cool.
So next what we want to do is, you know, divide each of these item regions with like a, you know, like a small area, can enter some text to show you that, you know, this is the exact hex color of this, you know, shirt. So there's several ways you can do that. You know, you can do that, you know, using CSS positioning by, you know, changing from absolute to relative or doing something like that. But one of the things that you support with, you know, with MetroCell apps in HTML is support for more richer layout options like Flexbox and Grid. And what I'm going to show you is how you can use the Grid container, using the Grid functionality to basically align and arrange your items in a different way, you know, in a way that's probably better suited for applications than traditional, you know, HTML content. So I'm going to click the outer container again. I'm just going to go and set the display property, and I'm going to search for that. And what we have here are all the various, you know, layout options you can have. You can do inline, you can do, you know, all the various things you've seen before, but MS Grid is the one I'm particularly interested in. And once I select MS Grid, you know, nothing really seems to happen. You don't see like heavenly music playing or, you know, anything cool like that. But what you do get the ability to do though is you get the ability to set grid lines and grid rows and all of that, which is really, really cool. So what I'm gonna do is, like, you know, I'm gonna divide my row into, like, you know, two rows like that. I'm gonna give this a height of, let's say, 53 pixels. And here's where I want some text to basically go. So I'm gonna go ahead and just search for my H2 tag, and I'm gonna go ahead and insert it. Right now it is placed right here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to actually have it go this location. So what I can do now is, you know, I need to basically specify some CSS properties that move these items around in this particular area. And I've shown you earlier where I created a style rule by right-clicking on something and saying create from class or whatever. What I want to do now is actually say, you know, for these things, I just want to create a style rule that's more generic, a tag-based selector. I'm just going to show you how to do that, you know, create new style rule, dot color outside. I'm just going to go ahead and target my H2 tag directly by adding H2 there. Once I've done that, you'll see my H2 element is right here. And what I want to do is just move it to the appropriate grid row. So I'm going to go ahead and find the grid category, expand it, and say I want it to live in MS Grid Row 2. Once I've done that, notice that it now moves into 2.
2, right, exactly. Because the CSS grid is not zero-based.
Correct. It starts with 1.
Yes.
Starts with 1.
Okay.
Yeah, probably Visual Basic influence, I'm assuming.
Well, that wouldn't take too long to remember.
No, absolutely not. And so while I'm here, I might as well make some more changes. You know, give it a background color. You know, give it a nice opacity to make it, you know, make the color partially bleed through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go and right align it. You know, this is all the various CSS properties that you can possibly set. You can do it visually and do it very quickly once you know exactly what you're doing. And go into some padding as well, also. So, you know, to make it sure it's like not, you know, too much in the top right corner. I'm going to go ahead and apply it to all the properties. 5 pixels and 5 pixels. All right, so now you can see that, you know, it is a little bit, you know, better positioned. And just like before, I'm going to go ahead and data bind to this as well, because the value I want to show is the color value. And I have a color text property. And the way I'm going to do that is exactly the way I did before. Find the data win by an attribute, type in my text content, and just type in color text. And once I hit refresh.
Color text.
Ah. Good call. But see, because of a live design surface, I can
immediately
say that,
you
know,
immediately, which
immediately,
is awesome.
Exactly. So now I'm just going to refresh it, and
that's
you have your
one
exact
issue. That's actually one issue that we run into quite often, particularly with XAML, where you'll misspell it and you don't get told immediately. So
absolutely.
I love that.
So the last thing I'm going to do is, you know, when I broke my, you know, container into a grid, the image element, you know, kind of got squished to the top, so you can see it's actually a little bit scrunched. What I want to do is I have the image actually, you know, stretch across both of them. And, you know, I can create another style rule. I can go and say, you know, I want to have it be, you know, target all image elements. But to show you, you can set an inline style easily as well, just like inline style. And then I'm going to go ahead and say, find my grid category. Grid row span, so it's spanning just by default 1. I'm going to say 2. Once I've done that, notice it spans both the rows. And if you look at the HTML, you'll see that the style has been added inline and all of that. So you can definitely do that if you really want to as well. So let's go and run our app just to see what it looks like right now. So yeah, so here you have your logo, you have some shirts, you can, you know, scroll through them.
So this is already a really good looking app.
It's already getting there.
And you had some help with the logo design, you had some help with the image design.
Correct.
Somebody who could draw a t-shirt and hoodies and whatnot and make them transparent. But then after that, you're just setting properties.
Setting properties.
And like you said at the start, I mean, you have to know some CSS.
Absolutely.
You can't be a total neophyte with it.
Yep.
So if you know the HTML, you know the CSS, then this
tool
is
more productive.
Just,
I mean, you know, because
really,
we give you like real-time feedback, you can definitely learn HTML and CSS using Blend very easily.
Yep.
But just, you know, it's much more productive if you actually, you know exactly which property to click and all of that, so less trial and error. So next I'm going to do is, you know, one of the things I showed you in the initial application is that you have some animation. You can actually, you know, when I hovered over the logo, mm-hmm. it shifted over a bit and it came back. Let's go and do that. So what I'm going to do is, you know, I'm going to modify my image element. I'm going to give it an ID this time. Let's call it, you know, logo. And just like before, I'm going to say create style rule from element ID, and we have the ID created for us. So first, you know, right now the positioning of this item is too close to the top and the next to our content. I'll just modify the padding a bit just to give it a nice look. Give it a padding of 20 pixels. Apply it equally, so notice that now there's some breathing room, some visual space for it. So what I'm going to do now is I want to specify a transition. I want a transition where here's what my logo looks like. When I hover over it, I want it to change by, you know, I want to change the margin properties I'm going to show you. So first what I'm going to do is just define my transition. I'm going to say, have my logo style rule selected. I'm going to expand the transition category. I'm going to say, you know, I want the transition to apply to all CSS properties. Like I can be more specific and say only want it to apply to a few properties, but just for the interest of time, I'm going to say all. I'm going to specify duration to, let's say, 0.5 seconds. That seems like a good one. And the easing function I'm going to use is ease in out. Why not? So I have my transition defined. So defining a transition, you know, initially is just one part of it. The next part is actually modifying some properties that it's now watching to actually, you know, have it be visualized. So what I'm going to do is, you know, I want to do something when I hover over the item. So I'm going to create a new style rule. I'm going to call this, you know, hashtag logo, colon, hover. I'm going to use the hover pseudo selector. Once I've done that, I'm just going to go ahead and say, find my margin, increase it by, let's see, 50 pixels. Give it a 50 pixel margin. And I'm going to go ahead and hit F5. And let's see this work, hopefully. Yes. Notice I'm going to hover over it now. The actual image moves.
Okay, so it's automatic. Once you defined it as hover, then you don't have to write anything that says, do this when hover starts, do this when hover is finished.
Correct.
Okay, that's pretty cool. That's easier than... Like in the XAML transforms, you got to specify exactly what happens. You'd have to set that margin to 0.5 and then set it back. Here, that's covered automatically.
Well, if you're using visual states, right. For example, it needs behaviors, and you do it all entirely visually without having to write any code at all. Okay. So your base state would be, you know, where it's at right now.
Right.
Then in some intermediate state, you can say, you know, I want it to be, you know, moved by 50 pixels. And then when you hover out of it, you have a new behavior that says, go back to my base when you're done. So a lot of similar constructs. But definitely in this case, you know, CSS makes it a little easier for us because the language defines a selected number of pseudo selectors, which allows you to do that very quickly. So the last thing I'm going to do is, at least with this particular application for now, is when you right-click on the app, let me go back to it, you'll see that it has a style to it, has a particular look that, you know, as you give it a check mark. So as I check it, you know, you can see that little border appears, and, you know, it's a check mark and nothing else happens. And what I want to do is modify the look and feel of just this particular experience. And here's an interesting one, though, because this is not a state my application can get into by just me opening up an HTML file and just, like, you know, playing around with it. This is a state that you get into only by interacting with it. Like, only when I explicitly right-click on an element do I actually see that particular state being entered into. And the way you would design it is normally, in a traditional Firebug approach is that, you know, I'd go into the state, use the inspector, click on, look at all my HTML, copy into Notepad or something, go back to my app, and then, you know, paste it in and hope that, you know, when I preview it again next time, it'll work really well. In Blend, what we've done is we have a feature called Interactive Mode, which really, you know, simplifies some of your way of being able to get into these states and design them without having to do the whole, you know, the rinse-repeat approach of, you know, F5, copy some markup values, try it out, hope it works, hit F5 again. Instead, you know, to go along with the live design surface that we have, the live version, we have Interactive Mode. I click it. What we do now is we're actually running your application inside Blend. And what I'm going to do, I'm just going to right-click on this item. And you can see that a check mark has appeared. I want to exit Interactive Mode. And once I've exited it, notice that the state of your application has been preserved. So I can actually see the check mark that only is available when I right-click on it at runtime, available at design time for me to go ahead and select, style, modify, and do whatever I want with it. So I'm going to go ahead and select it. And when I select it, you'll see that, you know, the styles that define it appear right here. You can see, you know, border container and all of that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to overwrite this. I'm going to say, you know, for my application, I want to give it like a nice faded background along with it. So I'm going to go to my styles panel. I'm going to go and just copy the value right here. I'm going to say create new. Just paste it in. And once I've done that, you know, now my default.css is a copy of the exact same, you know, selector that was originally in UIDark.css. It wasn't the original, the built-in styles. And I'm just going to go and specify a background. You know, give it a background color. Notice that it's white. but now it's very hard to see. I'm going to give it like a very light opacity, you know, barely visible, 15%, but enough to, you know, like let me get 25 so it shows up better on the camera. And now you can see that it looks different. If I hit F5 now, you can see what the app looks like. So everything looks normal here. Right-click on it, and look at
that. That's awesome.
And done entirely visually without any guesswork. I mean, it's completely, you know, predictable because, you know, it's a running app, and you're styling it as it is actually running. So that is a very quick overview of, like, you know, building some of these things, you know, from scratch with, like, adding some visuals, adding some data, binding it, and really being able to visually define a template, style it, modify it. You know, you can really, really go really far without ever having to touch, you know, HTML manually. Like, notice I never wrote CSS manually, never wrote HTML manually. But if I really wanted to, though, you know, I can do that if I want to. I can make changes, I can make modifications and all of that.
Well, that's one thing that I know you guys have been kind of working on for a while, and I've talked about this, particularly in regards to XAML, which is what I spend more of my time in. When we first learned XAML, we didn't have a designer. So all we did was type.
Correct.
And then, you know, we got a designer in 2008, which was, you know, a little bit more usable. And the 2010 designer was usable, but, you know, by that point, we were just used to typing.
Yep.
And now, with the work you guys have done with the XAML designer in Visual Studio, and obviously with this, you have a designer, which is, once you... It's absolutely worth taking the time to learn how to use it, because now you don't have to type. You didn't type anything. You did this all visually, and look what you got. It's
exactly.
Awesome.
Exactly.
It's tremendous work.
Absolutely. So the last part I'm going to talk about is, you know, we have a MetroCell app. It contains a lot of the controls and a lot of the look and feel. But a large part of these applications, you know, I'm going to go to my slides just for a brief
That's
moment.
Fine.
Is, you know, really one of the big focuses of MetroCell applications to focus on devices. You know, so we've known that, you know, devices that you'll be running Windows 8 on will be your tablet, your laptop, and your TV and big screen. And that, you know, but what really that means is that you have different display sizes now. You have a small screen like your phone, you have a medium screen like, you know, a laptop, and you have a large screen like your TV, a projector, or something like that. So designing an application now requires you to think a little bit more about this. You know, well, traditionally you might have said, oh, my app's going to run in a browser, it's going to run full screen or not full screen, but primarily, you know, in a medium screen or something like that, and hopefully this work fine other versions. With Windows 8, you have, you know, different orientations as well. So now your apps can be viewed in a device that can be viewed in landscape, which is what we normally think about when we think of applications, but also be in portrait. You know, my laptop cannot go into portrait mode, but your phone certainly can, for example, or like a tablet can certainly go into that orientation. And with Windows 8, you also have different layouts. You have different view states.
And
so
this is critically important. You know, we make this point that because users can snap your app, they're going to snap
Absolutely.
Your app. So what are you going to do about that? If you ignore that, if when you snap the app, it doesn't change, then users are going to look at that and say, oh, that's a crappy app.
Absolutely.
And as soon as you're at a crappy app, you're going to make less money on that app.
Absolutely.
So you absolutely have to spend time figuring out what the app's going to look like and do, particularly in snapped mode. Filled mode, if you want, you can leave filled mode as the same as full screen mode because it's just like 80% screen.
Sure.
It can do the same things and it doesn't have to look different. And with portrait, you could just rely on the built-in controls to automatically adjust.
Correct.
You don't necessarily have to do anything there.
Correct.
But you have to design for snap
mode. At the worst, at least be able to preview it, at least make sure, give a sanity check to make sure
your
app looks, you know, fine, can be still be usable and all of that.
And
alongside that, you also have resolutions. You know, your apps can be, you know, in larger resolution. Traditionally in Windows, you know, as your resolution kept going higher and higher, your UI just gets smaller and smaller, which was fine. Well, it was sort of fine for Windows before, but with Windows 8, especially with MetroCell apps, you know, to focus on touch, you really can't, you know, have your UI get to a point where you can no longer click on it. You can no longer, you know, interact with it using your finger, because your mouse cursor is very precise. You know, you can pretty much click on, you know, the most finite thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the most
precise thing. I would say that it, you know, you said that's good enough. I would say it's not, but it's accepted.
It was accepted,
right? Because it's not like we made it easy for you to have your app automatically adjust.
Correct.
So, you know, apps don't. Windows doesn't. Office doesn't. If you bump up the screen resolution on Windows 7, your icons stay the same. You know, they just get smaller. They don't.
Exactly.
They don't automatically resize. So how could you expect an app I built to resize?
You can change the DPI, but you know, you might get other issues with
that. But that's no longer the case.
No longer the case, exactly. Because you know, one of the things that you know is being done by the runtime is that, you know, once your DPI, once your PPI gets, you know, really high, basically in a case where you have a small device, high resolution, you know, Windows automatically does some scaling for you.
Right.
It actually says, you know, at a certain point we're gonna say, okay, the UI is small enough to a point where we need to increase everything by 40%.
Mm-hmm.
Or once you get a really high res, really high DPI device and a really small form factor, we're gonna say we want the app to be scaled by by 80%, almost double the size it has been in. So which means that as you're designing your application, you need to make sure that, you know, your app looks fine at all the fringes of all the various solutions that you can, you know, basically have your application run into. And to help with that, you know, you could go out and buy, like, you know, lots of devices and, you know, ask all your friends to try it out on their machines. But to partly, you know, address that, you know, shortcoming, especially at design time, we have what's called the platform panel in Blend, which gives you a very quick way of simulating what your application looks like across all the various views, all the various orientations, all the various display types. So here's my application. You know, let's say I designed it with landscape in mind, which is
what
most
people
do.
And this is cool because, you know, your first thought might be, well, just go into Visual Studio and run the app in the simulator and use the simulator.
Yeah.
But this is built in.
This is built in, exactly.
Awesome.
And, you know, so shortly is that, as I'll show you, is it's built in, and we're actually running the user code behind the scenes. So any runtime functionality, any runtime behavior quirks that might be required of the app to react to, you'll see it in Blend itself. You see the reaction to it directly. So here's my app, you know, full screen landscape. You know, things look fine, but let me go into filled. You know, notice that my logo is now cut off. You know, that looks kind of odd. I go to snapped again, logo completely cut off, looks really weird. Same with portrait. You know, logo's cut off, and you know, this all seems like kind of really odd. So there are two ways you can really react to, you know, changes to your orientation and layout. One is by obviously using media queries. You know, it's a great way of saying, you know, when I'm in this particular state, you know, I want you to do something different to make it look visually fine. The other way is by JavaScript. You know, some of the things you can do with media queries, you can do a lot of them, but you can't do certain things you want to do. In that case, like, I want to, you know, use JavaScript to say, okay, I want this controls property to be set to something else, or I want this image to be, you know, I want you to swap the image out entirely. I don't want you to, you know, display this image, I want to display a different image. So, you know, for that you need JavaScript. And I want to show you right now how we can do both those things in Blend directly. So first of all, let's go to filled. You know, we see the logo is kind of off. Let's go and fix that. I'm going to go back to my styles panel. When you create a blank project by default, we create some media queries for you as well. And as you can imagine, they correspond to the various view states your application can be in. So the first one is like full screen, like you can see the tooltip, you know, full screen landscape. But here's full, you know, here's the view state called filled. And here's where I want to actually modify my image a bit. I'm going to go ahead and create a style rule. It goes here. And, you know, it's called logo from, like, what I've used before. So I'm going to call this selector, you know, hashtag logo. And what I want to do in this state is I want this image to be a little smaller. You know, I think it's just too large. Let me go ahead and just set the width attribute on it to, let's say, 80%. And once I've done that, notice that now my logo is much smaller. And if I just were to make sure that I didn't mess up my view from the earlier state, if I go to landscape, you know, still the right size. If I go into this particular mode, it looks, you know, looks fine. And, you know, if we go into snapped, you know, not fine, because I did not specify media query for that. If we go into portrait, again, the same thing. So I'm going to quickly just go ahead and fix it up in portrait as well, the exact same mechanism. I'm just going to copy this exact same rule. I'm going to find the full screen portrait, add my new style rule, give it a selector of logo. Actually, I just pasted it. I'm not sure why I did that, but I'll show you actually doing it manually. Width, notice that we give you IntelliSense.
Ah, yeah.
80%. 80%. Okay, not 80%, but, you know, here's what it looks like in 80%. 80%, and notice that, you know,
fantastic,
it looks like in that state. So now, you know, I can see how it looks here, here, and all of that.
Yes.
So for this state, though, you know, the snap view is just way too small where, you know, setting a really small width value wouldn't really help because, you know, there's way too much things
you
that need to happen.
Swap out the
I want to swap out the image. So I talked about earlier that, you know, we have great integration with Visual Studio. I'm going to go and show you how that, you know, works. So I'm going to go ahead and edit in Visual Studio. I mean, you saw this earlier where I opened up a project in Blend into Visual Studio. I'm just going to go a little further in it. I'm going to go and open default.js. And this is the code you saw earlier that I had. And what I'm going to do is just add some code that essentially listens to the actual size changing and swaps the image for us. So just to give a quick overview of what the code does, I'm just basically adding an event handler that listens for the resize event and just basically pulls the window, a Windows API that tells me what's the current view I'm currently in. And then it finds a reference to my image, which I called logo, has an ID of logo. I'm just going to call it store it in my logo object, and just say, if I'm in view state 2, if I'm in snapped, change my logo source to this. If I'm in the larger version, it can go right there. And if I go to Blend right now, just refresh it, let me go back to my default view. And, you know, we said this all works. Notice I'm going to snap this time, the image has changed. It's a completely different version. And just to, you know, show, like, you know, when I first built this version of it, you know, there wasn't much documentation on what exactly, you know, equals, what a view state actually equals. And the way I figured it out was by basically saying, you know, I'm going to hit a breakpoint, hit F5, exact same app I was running earlier, and let's see what happens. Here's my app. I'm going to snap it into place. Notice my breakpoint gets hit.
Yep.
You can see my app. And that's how I was able to, you know, use some of the, you know, the great debugging functionality you have in VS to, you know, make the change. If I were to step into it, notice that, you know, it all exits. Yeah, so I'll just stop that, get out of it, and go back to my app. And notice that one thing I really want to emphasize, though, is that I talked about you have a live design surface, but it is live, you know, also in JavaScript. I just gave you, and it's verbally mentioned it, but notice what's actually happening. You know, I'm listening to a resize event. I'm pulling a Windows API to see what value it is. And at design time, you know, inside Blend, you're able to see that the event being fired, your JavaScript running, being able to react to it, you know, without having to do any extra work. And so if I really wanted to now, I can click on this element, make some more stylistic changes that I want, which I otherwise would not be able to do if I did not have the ability to design my application with all of this stuff running live. And of course, resolution that I talked about earlier, you can, you know, change your resolution to various sizes and see what your app looks like. You know, for the most part, the scaling is quite good where you really don't have to do too much work to make things look different. But if I were to make it much larger, you can see that, okay, I have like, a lot of, I have really high resolution, really large device like this TV, for example, I see multiple rows of shirts, like three rows of shirts, basically. And you can quickly design your app and preview it and make sure that, you know, I have no, like, you know, really bad behavior. Like, for example, this background image is, like, you know, kind of cropped and it's broken. But I'm not going to fix that now, but, you know, I'm just going to, you know, you all know how to do that right now. Yeah. So,
but you can, but you get to check it out.
Exactly.
Right here from inside Blend.
Inside Blend. And, you know, we give you an exact, accurate, pixel-perfect
representation. And then that deploy target, you can set that to simulator?
Exactly. I can simulator and hit F5. And then if I really wanted to do something.
I gotta tell you, this product is awesome.
Yeah, it's a great, great time saver. So, yeah, so with that, you know, to wrap up quickly, you know, just to summarize what's going on. You know, like I mentioned before, you know, these are my five favorite features in Blend, just to give a quick summary. You know, one thing I couldn't talk more, you know, I can't stop talking about. This is really the accurate design surface. You know, live HTML, live JavaScript, live CSS. I mean, if I were to open this, you know, an existing project up in Expression Web, which has its own great HTML5 support, you know, here's what you see. You don't see much. You know, the reason is that JavaScript isn't running. So, you know, without a JavaScript running, your app looks like this. But once you have your JavaScript actually going in and, you know, dynamically creating visuals and putting things in the right place, you have your static, you know, blank application that just does really cool things from there. Likewise, you know, we create clean and predictable HTML and CSS. We, you know, really want to make sure that, you know, when you're using Blend, you really trust the markup we create and you're really proud of it. And you can tell your friends, oh, by the way, you know, this markup, you know, we create using a visual tool, and hopefully not have them yell and scream at you because of, you know, historical, you know, issues with the quality of markup created by visual tools. Second, you know, we support a lot of the concepts that you might have covered in your previous talks, you know, working with controls, fragments, templates, and all of that. You know, we don't spend too much time talking about them because it's seamless. You know, if you're visually modifying and editing your application, you know, is it really important you know you're in a fragment? Sometimes, yes, but for the most part, I just want to add my image. I want to style it. I want to add some bindings to it and all of that. So we make it very easy for you to do that. Second, you know, one of my favorite features is interactive mode, where, like I said, when you have it, when you right-click on a particular UI and you have some UI that appears only at that state, traditionally, it's hard to design it, but with interactive mode, you can run your application, interact with it, play with it within the UI of Blend itself, get into that state, and exit out of it. And when you exit out of that state, you are actually being able to design, you know, whatever visuals that were brought up to the forefront. So you can actually design states that are normally not attainable by just, you know, opening an HTML file and imagining what might happen when JavaScript runs and does some really cool things. And the last thing is really, you know, excellent integration with Visual Studio, because, you know, Blend is great for visual design tasks. You know, it's okay for coding, but it's not great. You know, you have basically like a slightly better than Notepad experience. Visual Studio for coding, you know, we work on the same project, exact same workflow. So, you know, why not use both to make your life easier? So, and that's basically, you know, that is essentially all I have to talk about.
That is awesome.
People can, you know, email me if they have any questions and all that. They can contact me
I will say my favorite feature is how flipping cool that is.
Yeah, absolutely.
what a great product. It feels... You know, in the past, you've tried to get, you know, you build a Visual Studio, then you can pop over into Expression and do things, and then you can pop back to Visual Studio. So they worked great kind of side by side.
Yep.
But here, you can go file new project, essentially, do everything that you need to do in Blend, then go into Visual Studio and do just the coding.
Absolutely.
So I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, it depends on how you
can start in Visual Studio and then go back into Expression, but that's great.
I mean, yeah, it depends entirely on your on your workflow, what kind of team you're in. You know, in my application, for example, I could have started in Visual Studio, added my list view, added some data, and then put it over into Blend and have the user modify it. I mean, it all depends on how you want to work.
But you don't have to.
You don't have to.
Which is so cool.
There's no prescription.
All right. Thanks so much for coming on.
No problem.
Hope you enjoyed this. Again, download the Visual Studio betas, whether it's just whether it's the Express or all the way up to Ultimate, they all come with Blend for Visual Studio. I think there's some, is there good documentation? Are there good walkthroughs? I think there were some in the Windows Developer Center for using.
Both the Windows Developer Center and BlendInsider.com.
BlendInsider.com.
It's our official blog where we show a lot of the tips and tricks.
So check those out and learn how to use this. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me, Robert.
And we'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.